This is 1A. From Washington, I'm Indira Lakshmanan, executive editor of the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting, in for Joshua Johnson. Nuclear reactors generate about a fifth of the electricity we use in the United States. But that ratio is likely to dwindle. Nuclear power plants are closing. Five have shuttered in the last decade, and more are scheduled to shut down in the years to come. Opinion is divided over whether this is a good thing or not. One voice is saying it is good, and that's Gregory Yatsko. He was chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission from 2009 through 2012. He has now turned against the industry that he used to regulate. His new book is called Confessions of a Rogue Nuclear Regulator. Thanks for being here, Greg.
Well, thanks, Indira. It's a real pleasure.
So you call yourself a rogue nuclear regulator in your book title. Let's start with that. What makes you rogue?
Well, I think the thing that makes me rogue is I'm telling the truth about how the industry is regulated. And that's not something you hear from people a lot. It's an industry that's almost kind of a quiet industry. And I think people are really, they're not used to hearing and knowing what happens inside the halls of the agency and how it really gets regulated.
All right. So you're blowing the lid off of all of that in the book. But even before you became chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, you were a bit of a Washington outsider and kind of a surprising pick to run the agency, right?
Yeah, I was. I had worked, I came to Washington having a PhD in physics and came here and worked for a congressman from Massachusetts. And then
Ed Markey,
that's
now
right.
Now senator.
That's right. He's moved up in the world. And the senator from Nevada, Harry Reid, who, of course, wound up being the Senate Majority Leader. And both of them had really taken strong positions against nuclear power, really, or for nuclear safety, or in the case of Senator Reid, against the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Repository. So I'd kind of come to the job as someone who had been not really affiliated with the industry, but affiliated with people who had been critics of the industry.
And in fact, you mentioned Yucca Mountain, which Harry Reid was extremely against. Even that was supposed to be the dump site for nuclear waste that had been negotiated at the highest levels of the U.S. government back in the 1980s, I think. And shortly after you came into office, Yucca Mountain was actually rejected as the nuclear waste site. And I think some in government were pretty mad about that.
Well, that was one of the things that President Obama did when he took charge of the government, is he ended that project. And I was the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which had the responsibility for reviewing a license. And so one of the things I did that was pretty controversial at the time was I stopped the work we were doing. When you don't have a licensee or the person supporting the project interested, it doesn't make a lot of sense to actually go about and try and do the regulation and determine if it's safe or not. And, you know, that was one of those moments where I realized maybe there was something not quite right about how the agency worked, because we should have been a really impartial observer in that whole process. And yet, once I made that decision, a lot of my colleagues on the commission were very upset about it and didn't like that and thought we somehow should continue to keep this project going when, in fact, it wasn't our project to begin with.
Now, it's interesting because you say that you and President Obama were in concert on Yucca Mountain, but in the book you tell a story about how you learned that President Obama wasn't actually very pleased about giving you the job.
Yeah, so I really got the job because of Harry Reid. Senator Reid really pushed hard for me to get there. The industry was not really supportive of me as chairman because they weren't quite sure what my views about the industry were going to be. And at that time, the president was very, very concerned about climate change, and rightfully so, and believed strongly that in order to solve climate change, you needed to have some component of nuclear power. And I think there was a sense that perhaps I wasn't going to be the person to make sure that the industry survived and thrived. And in my view, that wasn't the job of the regulator to begin with. So, it was irrelevant to me whether that happened. But I thought safety was the most important thing.
Well, speaking of safety, during your tenure as the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, on March 11th of 2011, there was that terrible earthquake off the coast of Japan that caused a chain of events resulting in a massive energy accident at the Fukushima nuclear power plant. Tell us how that played out for you as head of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission at the time.
Well, that was a really interesting time, certainly. And it all started with a phone call early on, I think what was a Friday morning, where I heard from the staff at the agency that there had been an earthquake and potentially a tsunami. And of course, our focus, believe it or not, was really for plants in the West Coast of the United States. because this tsunami wave could travel across the entire Pacific Ocean and potentially could have threatened the plants there. So that was our initial focus and concern. And as things evolved on that day, it became clear that there was something bad brewing at the reactors in Japan. And that would become an incident and an accident, then eventually that would consume the agency. We had people working 24 hours a day for weeks on end to provide information to Americans in Japan, to provide information to the Japanese government. And it really became an all-consuming activity for us as the regulator here in the United States.
Well, here's President Obama on March 17th, 2011, speaking 6 days after the Fukushima accident happened.
Our nuclear power plants have undergone exhaustive study and have been declared safe for any number of extreme contingencies. But when we see a crisis like the one in Japan, we have a responsibility to learn from this event and to draw from those lessons to ensure the safety and security of our people.
Well, did the U.S. learn from that event? Did the accident in Japan spur any meaningful safety changes in the U.S.?
Well, one of the things I was most proud of in my time at the agency was a report that was done by the staff that laid out a number of recommendations for how we could fix nuclear reactors in the U.S. And unfortunately, that report became very controversial and led to a lot of conflict at the agency about whether we should implement those regulations. And unfortunately, many of those regulations today have not been implemented.
Well, how did the Fukushima incident itself shift your opinion of nuclear power? Because as one of our listeners points out, Rod Adams, he says that Greg Yatsko was an anti-nuclear activist while a grad student at the University of Wisconsin in the late 90s. He then served, as you said yourself, two of the most anti-nuclear Congress people, at least this is our listeners' way to describe them, Ed Markey and Harry Reid. Is that true that you had already been an anti-nuclear activist as a grad student? And did Fukushima push you even further down that route?
No, I really had never really given much thought to nuclear power when I was in graduate school. I was actually in graduate school, I was working as a scientist. I was working on a thesis in particle physics, which was a very esoteric brand of physics. And I actually did some work at that time with the local teachers' assistance union. Actually, the graduate students at the University of Wisconsin, where I did my graduate work, were unionized and actually helped work on contract negotiations and things like that. The farthest thing you could imagine from nuclear power or having any thoughts about nuclear power at the time.
All right. But Fukushima then is what you would call your sort of moment of then looking over the cliff and saying, this is dangerous. Here's an industry I'm regulating, but I actually think it's so unsafe that it's not even about regulating it. It's about shutting it down. Is that fair?
Yeah. So, before the accident, accidents were something you thought about in textbooks. You thought about them in computer analyses. They were hypotheticals. After what happened in Fukushima, they were now real. There were real people who were evacuated. There were real people who were struggling to deal with the incident. There were real people who got high radiation exposures trying to bring the reactors under control. And in fact, some people actually died responding to the incident. So this was no longer something we could just theorize may or may not happen. This was a real thing we had to deal with. And the effects were amazing. You had over 100,000 people evacuated from their homes. You had the economy of an entire country, a major industrialized country, suffer. The GDP went down. You had significant changes in their energy portfolio. They had to reduce power and reduce consumption because all of a sudden, about a third of their electricity generation was offline because of this accident. So this was a major, major event, and one you could just no longer say was possible or a hypothetical or wasn't really going to have an impact.
And
it had a real impact.
And yet there are proponents of nuclear power who see it as a real alternative to fossil fuels and something that's better for the climate, who say that actually technology is such that we in the United States could certainly avoid a Fukushima or another Three Mile Island or Chernobyl happening here. And I'm thinking specifically of Bill Gates. Here he is talking about the question of safety to the Wall Street Journal in 2012.
When they built, say, the reactor at Fukushima, their ability to simulate things was very limited. They wouldn't really know. We take our reactor, we have magnitude 10 earthquakes, we have volcanoes blow over, we have tidal waves passing by, and we look and we say, oh, okay, let's put some more concrete in. You can understand what's going to happen digitally in a way that you never could before.
So what do you say to that, Greg?
Well, at the end of the day, the way reactors are designed, there's always going to be something that can go wrong. So you can put more concrete on, and if you put more concrete on, then the problems will happen somewhere else. So there's a fundamental just flaw in the way that these reactors are designed. But the other piece you have to keep in mind is that we don't operate in a world with infinite money. So the more concrete you put on, the more things you do to make the reactors safer and safer and safer, the more expensive they get. And they get to the point where they're simply too expensive to matter. And that's really what we're seeing right now in the U.S. So when I was chairman, we at the same time that we were dealing with this Fukushima accident, the industry was on the verge of what it called a renaissance. And we had applications for a number of new reactors. And in fact, while I was chairman, we licensed 4 new reactors. Well, today, first of all, they were supposed to already be operating, and they're not. 2 of them have been canceled, and the other 2 are costing $27 billion to build. And that number, it hasn't stopped there. It probably is going to go up, and every day that they continue on the project, the cost estimate seems to go up. So that's $27 billion. So that's not a viable way to deal with fossil fuels in the future. If it costs $27 billion to get 2 reactors, that's simply too expensive. We won't get anywhere that way.
So you're saying essentially far more expensive than the other alternatives to fossil fuel and not really a sustainable solution. We'll talk more about that after the break. We're speaking with former chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Greg Yatsko. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, in for Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Stay with us. This is 1A. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, in for Joshua Johnson. We're discussing nuclear power with former chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Greg Yatsko. We'd love to hear from you, too. What question do you have about nuclear power? You can comment on our Facebook page, you can tweet us at 1A, or you can email us 1A@WAMU.org. In June 2017, President Trump gave a speech promising to promote America's energy dominance.
To propel this new era of American energy dominance. First, we will begin to revive and expand our nuclear energy sector, which produces clean, renewable, and emissions-free energy. A complete review of U.S. nuclear energy policy will help us find new ways to revitalize this crucial energy resource.
All right. Well, a year and a half later, the Trump administration has made no new announcements about this review that was supposedly underway. And yet the nuclear power industry seems to be struggling despite the nuclear renaissance that Greg told us about. 9 nuclear power plants have plans to shut down by 2025. That's on top of 6 that have already closed since 2013. So, Greg, first of all, why exactly is the nuclear power industry struggling when it was getting so much support at a higher level of this nuclear power renaissance we were all hearing and reading about?
You know, it comes down to the bottom line, which is money. The plants are simply too expensive in many parts of the country. You have places where electricity markets are based on really competition, and you have cheap wind, you have cheap solar, you have these technologies which are coming online, which are simply a lot cheaper and easier to operate and use. And that's why these reactors are struggling, which is why when I hear people talk about nuclear as a kind of a climate change savior, I scratch my head, because the market is making a very different decision. The market is saying, we want wind, we want solar, we want these other kinds of clean technologies. That's where we think the future is. And those are responding by getting cheaper, becoming more viable and more effective.
So in your view, the federal government should not be doing anything to prop up nuclear power, right?
Right. I don't think subsidies make sense. If you're going to do subsidies in this area because you want to tackle climate change, you should make those subsidies really technology neutral. And I think if you do that, the other technologies like wind, solar, renewables, storage, all the things you need to make these things viable are going to be even more effective and even more competitive. So, if they want subsidies, which we might need to really, really tackle climate change, you just want to do it in a way that rewards the best performers, and that's not going to be nuclear.
Well, the very well-respected and nonpartisan Union of Concerned Scientists really came out with a statement in November when they advocated for keeping nuclear power plants open as long as possible. That's because they say that nuclear power is less harmful to the environment than other types of energy, namely fossil fuels. And the group says that the climate crisis is so severe that protecting the environment needs to be our top priority, and nuclear does that a lot better than our current dependence on fossil fuels. And I might add, our energy dominance in the fossil fuel industry with all the fracking and other things we have going on. So, you know, don't they have a point?
I simply don't agree with that assessment. I think nuclear has a lot of problems. And, you know, one example I could point to is Fukushima in Japan. This was a country that, of course, this was the country of the Kyoto Protocol. And this was a country that was moving fast towards reducing carbon emissions, and they hinged that strategy on nuclear power. And then, of course, you had the Fukushima accident, and after that accident, their carbon emissions shot way up because they were forced to turn to other technologies. They had to burn gas, they had to burn coal. So it's not an effective strategy, and they're actually bringing their emissions down today, and they're doing it by investing in solar, by investing in efficiency, and it's actually turned the corner. Now, they've got some of their reactors running, but not most of them. So they're actually showing you can do it without nuclear power, and you don't run the risk of these catastrophic accidents that can just take out your entire industry and your entire climate strategy if it's based on that.
You referenced the Kyoto Protocol. Of course, you're referring to the more than 20-year-old now climate agreement negotiated in Japan. You know, I want to ask you, you keep talking about Fukushima. How is it different from the other past accidents, such as Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania or Chernobyl in Russia?
Well, every nuclear accident has been a little bit different. So the accident in Fukushima involved four reactors, and it released a tremendous amount of radiation. Not as much as the radiation at Chernobyl, but it was a lot of radiation. The Three Mile Island accident did not release a lot of radiation at the time, and only really a little bit of radiation later. So, you know, actually what we're seeing over time is that accidents have actually gotten worse rather than better. And that's not the kind of trend that you want to see with a technology like this, especially a technology that people are talking about as a savior for climate change or meeting the world's energy needs in the future.
One of our listeners, Patrick, sends us an email saying, I wrote my master's thesis on the history of nuclear waste disposal at a government nuclear reactor research site in Idaho. Nuclear waste is a huge problem. Some nuclear waste remains dangerous for 10,000 years. 10,000 years in the past, humans were barely inventing agriculture. With current government instability, how can we possibly believe that we can keep that waste safe 10,000 years from now? What do you say to that?
Yeah, this is another one of the challenges with nuclear power is that you generate this very dangerous waste stream that needs to be monitored and maintained or isolated from the environment, not for tens of thousands of years, but for hundreds of thousands of years. So it's a real problem, and it's one that we don't really have an immediate long-term solution for. But by the same token, in the short term, for the next 10, 20, 100 years or so, the fuel is largely in a stable form and can largely be monitored and maintained safely as long as you're putting it in the right places. And right now, that's really at the reactor sites where it was generated.
So before people panic and get their own hazmat suits and make their own little nuclear protection chambers, you're saying that nuclear power plants in America are actually safe at this time?
Well, you know, most of the plants do operate safely. They always kind of operate on this precipice of on the one side is safe operation, on the other side is catastrophic accident. And it's just hard to predict when exactly your foot's going to slip to one side or the other. And that's the challenge with nuclear power. And when you couple that with the fact that these reactors are expensive, and the new ones are certainly more expensive than anything we can foresee out there for clean energy, it really makes sense to start thinking about a climate strategy and a change in our infrastructure that moves away from nuclear power. Not tomorrow, but over the next 5 to 10 years or so, or, you know, as these reactors begin to age and start to shut down on their own.
Well, another of our listeners comments on our website, the real energy solution is cheap, indiscriminate green energy. Solar panels are made from the most abundant materials on Earth. Wind turbines are just fan blades and a motor. It's not that expensive, and it really is that simple. I mean, you yourself now, Greg, are working as an entrepreneur with a clean energy development company. Is this listener right? It's that simple and it's that cheap?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, what you're seeing is in the marketplace, people are making choices towards this kind of energy because it's the cheapest and it provides the kind of electricity we want. It has no emissions. It's something you can do sometimes in your own home. So it's a very different way of thinking about energy, but you know, as I say, the right solution right now for the planet is really the right solution for the pocketbook. And it's great as an environmentalist to be in a position to be able to say that.
What do you say to our listener, Tim, in Lambertville, Michigan, who says nuclear is the only technology that can replace fossil fuels while maintaining a reliable supply of energy? Intermittent wind and solar can't satisfy our always available requirements. Nuclear is also the safest energy source ever devised.
Well, I think there's a lot of issues there. The first one is really this idea of intermittency. And what I think about is really what's called dispatch. So being able to turn the plants on and off when you need them. And with wind and solar, as they become more prevalent, you need a way to be able to do that. And the way to do that is with what we call storage. So you can think of it as batteries or other types of storage. That technology is also getting dramatically cheaper. So it's getting to the point where you can't make an argument anymore about this dispatchability of these technologies. It's really not going to be a problem as we get into the future. And the technology behind batteries, behind thermal storage, all these things, it's really pretty straightforward. It's a matter of just the economies of scale to get the material costs down so that you can afford them in a reasonable way.
So Samuel in Silver Spring, Maryland is pretty worried. He says the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's ability to protect public health and safety by regulating nuclear power plant design, construction, and operation is gone. He says the NRC has yet to deny a plant operator a license to operate its plant for 20 or 40 years beyond its design operating lifetime. The NRC has also been consistently authorizing utilities to operate their plants at power levels higher than originally licensed. Is he right? And was this happening under your tenure at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
Well, in the last point, I'm not sure of times in which plants have been allowed to operate above their license. That's something that the agency takes very seriously. But I do think that there has been a tendency to appoint commissioners. The commissioners, the people who lead the agency, are appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And there's been a tendency to want to have a majority of commissioners who keep a very close eye on ensuring the survivability of the industry. And that was certainly not my focus when I was there. And that led to a lot of conflicts with my colleagues. And I think that can give the agency a really bad name, because I met some amazing federal workers who were at the agency who were trying to do everything they could for safety and to make sure that people were protected. And at the end of the day, they would run into obstacles with the commission. So I think that is something that needs to change, you know, especially because this technology, while I think it should be phased out, it's not going away tomorrow. And we do need to make sure that we continue to ensure that the plants that are out there do operate safely and we don't have a Fukushima-style accident or some other type of accident here in the United States.
One of our listeners, Rod Adams, tweets that he's looking forward to hearing Dr. Yatsko explain why he resigned from the NRC. According to Rod, there was good reason that all the other commissioners, Democrats and Republicans, reported on your relations with other technical experts, including females who disagreed with your position. So you did resign from your chairmanship amid allegations of mismanagement. You were a bit of a lone actor on the commission, often the lone vote to support new regulations. How do you reflect on your leadership?
Well, you know, I look back and, you know, I think that obviously there were mistakes that I made, but at the end of the day, the issues we were dealing with were important issues, and I was fighting for things that I believed in, and I don't regret any of those actions, and I certainly regret if I ever did anything in an overbearing way or in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, you know, I was fighting for what I believed in, and that was the safety of the American people, and I don't regret that.
All right. Well, one of our listeners, at least, John Sims, tweets, he's with you because less radioactive waste is a good thing, put that simply. All right. Greg Yatsko is former chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. His new memoir is called Confessions of a Rogue Nuclear Regulator. Thanks so much for joining us today, Greg.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
In a moment, we'll talk with the author of a short story that went viral at the start of the Me Too movement. Kristen Rupinian's cat person became the New Yorker's second most read story published online in the whole year. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, in for Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A.